Welcome back to the Dylan Jamelli podcast. I am your host, Dylan Jamelli, and I have an amazing guest with me today. I am extremely looking forward to having her on. She's very busy and has taken time for us. She is the owner and founder of IHC Agency and as well as the Biohack It podcast, but she does a ton of other things that we're going to get into. So without further ado, I welcome Ayman Hassan. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Dylan, for reaching out and having me on. I really appreciate it. I love your content. So I was excited to have the opportunity to talk to your audience.
Yeah, thank you. And I just want to prep everybody ahead of time. Be prepared because we are very passionate about what we're going to talk about today. And so you're going to get a lot of, I would say, deep dives into things that you are going to benefit from, I assure you. So why don't we start just with your background a little bit, because I was blessed enough to stumble upon you and I was fascinated immediately by your content. But what brought you into this realm, like the biohacking realm, a talent agency? What is it that drove you down this route?
So I've been working in like the PR marketing kind of space for like, you know, I give my age away by saying this, but I started working really young. I was 18 years old when I started my career. I lived in London at the time. I was going to school there. And I started my career straight at Condé Nast. I started my career at Vogue House back in the day. And then, you know, kind of worked in London for a while, went to Dubai, then moved to the States. And I've lived in America now for 10 years. And so I've always kind of worked in PR, marketing, kind of that whole like, you know, realm of things. And 5 years ago, I was having a lot of my own personal health issues. And at the time, I did a lot of PR marketing for hospitality and spirits and a lot of fashion and luxury retail. And then 5 years ago, I was having my own health issues. My mom was, you know, had cancer for about 10 years and kept on fighting the cancer. And I was like, something does not seem right. And I was very fortunate that I got introduced to a functional medicine doctor who had me take a complete different look at my health and spoke about things like candida and spoke about like inflammation in my body. And at the time I was suffering from a rare cyst. I'd keep on having reoccurring cysts. I'd had multiple surgeries. And he's like, you have an estrogen dominance problem. And this is coming from this place. And it's not by you being on the pill. You're not fixing the root cause. And that was kind of my first introduction. I know you're super passionate about peptides, but and then kind of from there, just dove deeper. And when my mom 2 years ago passed away from ovarian cancer and I was completely against her treatment protocol, which was just like radiation and chemo. And now we know those are things that not only kill off the bad stuff, but also kill off the good stuff. Uh-huh. And cancer is it's a metabolic disease. It's a lifestyle disease. I started looking at it from a different lens. And I remember coming back and telling my team, because the agency is still very young. I worked for a lot of other big companies and 4 years ago started IHC. Now we've become a national agency. We're based in New York, Miami, and expanding overseas to the Middle East. We have a team of 15 people and growing. I remember coming back and saying, listen, we've done this for so long and I've built a lot of these incredible like household name brands, but I want to focus my energy on building out the health and wellness department of the company. And I was so affected by the way my mom's diagnosis went down. And I was so deathly against this, you know, kind of 2020 and 2021, everything was kind of happening. I was so deathly against her taking the booster shot, completely against it. And she took the booster and 3 months later she died. And there was no reason for her to take the booster. And I was thinking to myself, why would you give an immune compromised person who's not leaving the house the booster shot? And so that kind of is where my passion came for the space to dive deeper. And at the time, health and wellness was very like mom and pop and it was a bit like kitschy. So they didn't have the elevation or the way to sell themselves and position themselves how luxury brands do, right? So I said, what if I took my knowledge and everything that I built and learned like from different countries and editorial background going into PR marketing, all of this stuff, and put it towards building like brands and personalities and products in the space. And so we started getting into it. We got really lucky. One of our first clients, which was a really big win actually, was Sweetgreen. So we worked with them for like, you know, almost a year and a half. It was amazing working with them. You know, they kind of came down to Florida. And they were having, you know, kind of trying to scale their presence here, but Miami has its own community and things like that. So we worked with them on that. You know, they were going seed oil free at the time. So it's a very interesting time to see this whole like shift kind of happening. So that's how I got into the space. I think it was like a little bit of inspiration in whatever way, shape, and form. It came from my mom, you know, dying of cancer. My dad had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He passed away a year before she died. knowing now that diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are born 10, 20 years before they actually diagnose, mm-hmm. they're born in the gut. And there's ways to mitigate that stuff. And looking at this, like, and saying, like, something doesn't seem right. And then dealing and healing my own health, really, is how I got started.
I want to touch on that gut health. But real quick, one of the things that I'm sure you've noticed that I noticed, too, is a lot of people in, like, biohacking may not necessarily have, like, an MD after their name. But what I find is that they know so much more in depth because something has personally happened that has driven them to, like, really take all of their might and their grit and focus it all on one thing and then make it their passion. And I've noticed that with so many people, and I just love that. And I find that you don't necessarily have to have that credential after it. It's the drive and the study and the want and the desire. And I feel like that's what you have. And that's what I love so much about this whole community in general.
I just think the beautiful thing, like you've kind of said, is you have to be passionate and about. And this is where a lot of, like, even the doctors are coming out and saying it. Dr. Casey Means has come out. So many others have come out and said the American medical system is completely broken. It mm-hmm. is funded by big pharma. So if people going to medical school are indoctrinated from the minute they walk into medical school because they're funding for all the studies, the research, the curriculum that's being taught is all coming from things like big pharma, big food, big ag. And they're churning out. And there was something, you know, I was watching another podcast. There was something like the biggest amount of scientists and studies, food studies, actually funded by big food and big pharma.
I know.
It's like you're indoctrinating these doctors, right?
Yeah.
They know that insurance companies have to pay them, and they get paid when they write off a prescription and it gets sold to something that belongs to pharmaceuticals. And so if that's where all the money is coming from and they're caught in this hamster wheel, there's no more critical thinking. There's no more independent thinking because you're penalized and punished for thinking outside the box. So you have a whole slew of people who cannot look past what they've been trained or their belief systems, because then everything would fall apart. So then you have people like yourself who take it upon themselves to do this research and be like, hey, something is not adding up here. And I say it, I was like, I'm not an MD, I'm not a nutritionist. I just have a passion for this space. Would I know the next, you know, as much as a full standing MD that can dive really deep into the biology? Maybe it's not, but I can definitely tell you some things are not right. And Jillian Michaels said this in a podcast that I interviewed her on, like, let's use our common sense, people. If something is not seeming right, let's use our common sense to be like, is this making sense? Let's check in with ourselves, because we are getting taught that it's so wrong to question something and we just need to follow the lead on something and not check in with our gut.
Mm-hmm.
It's causing this complete disaster that we're witnessing in our healthcare systems, that we're just looking for outside people to maybe give us validation on things that don't feel right with us internally.
Yes. I gritted my teeth when you said that about asking questions, because I have been saying that now for like 4 or 5 years when they started this nonsense about you can't ask questions. And I believe that everything that we have learned over time and are founded on is about asking questions. We wouldn't have any technologies. We wouldn't have any medicines. We wouldn't have jack shit.
Thing, right?
No. The science changes every day. There's a way it changes. And if we don't ask and question it, where are we going? Well, I mean, that to me, so I say this and you tell me for credibility wise, if I come to you and say, Iman, I am wondering about this study that you put out on Kellogg's, which we're going to get into. And can you explain, because I don't understand this, if you respond in kind and break it down real nice and tell me because you're passionate and because you have the answer, I'm like, oh, shit. OK, if you get angry and start, you know, getting uptight and mumbling your words and telling me you grew up in a middle class family instead of asking answering the question, I know you're full of shit, you know. And so it's so frustrating. So I'm so glad you pointed that out, is what I'm saying.
You know, and you see a lot of these, like, registered dietitians that are like kind of standing behind, like, but it's okay what Kellogg's is putting in because food dyes are really not that for you. What are you talking about? Food dyes are not bad for you. They're linked to hyperactivity in children, which is later leads to things like autism and ADHD. Like, what are you talking about that food dyes are not bad for you? Food dyes are also linked to cancer. Like, so who is paying you? And then you have to dive deeper and be like, who's funding these people? What are they part of? Are they part of this independent think tank? Well, who's really funding the think tank over here? Like, it just becomes this really nasty web. And I feel like so many people are like just paid shills for these big organizations. And so the whole industry of like health and wellness to some extent got like in some ways has lost its credibility. And then people who do speak out, like Vani, the food babe, who is amazing at the work that she does, she's attacked again and again and again. Her family's attacked. So it's just, it's terrible what we've done.
I think that's where that brings though us to now. And I'm curious because I have said this to my wife and I posted it that the cancelers are now being canceled. So there's too many of us now. And now we have what I would say is the ability to be at the forefront of this, because I don't know how much time we're going to have in terms of how everything's being ran now after this election. And some people may not want to hear that. And it's surely too bad because the facts are the facts are the facts and they don't lie. And this isn't even a political thing. It's a factual thing. And the facts are that people have been muzzled. People have been vilified. People have been shut down. It's proven. It's not any sort of conspiracy whatsoever. It's all proven. So my question to you is this. How do you feel about our opportunity moving forward? And how is your confidence level in terms of everything that like RFK has promised and President Trump has promised? Because I feel very positive. I felt like the biggest wave of relief. And I felt like it was such a landslide that people really said enough is enough is enough.
So I feel very relieved because there was no other party on so many issues that I was aligned with, you know, and a lot of us got the ability to come on and say, actually, you know, we lean right. We are actually Republicans, because in the last election, you wouldn't dare open your mouth openly on social media because you would get canceled and all that. So I think that people have actually had enough. And I'm obviously a Muslim, you know, immigrant woman, and people are like shocked. They're like, how could you align with the right? But why would I not? Because they speak to so many things that I value, right? And so there's this whole like backlash, like almost like the backlash that happened on this, you know, leftist legacy media. And people like myself started speaking up and saying, hey, this is where I actually aligned. And a lot had to do with the MAHA movement, but then also a lot of other things. So I feel very excited to see them kind of coming to this. But at the end of the day, we need to remember the Senate still needs to stand behind this. And we don't know how easy or hard they're going to make it. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. I obviously don't work in politics. I don't know that. But so far, you know, them appointing Jay Bhattacharya was an amazing, you know, thing. Dr. Morty. So they're bringing in the right people to do this, to be part of like the FDA and the CDC and the NIH. I just hope this goes through. And that's, we're only going to really see kind of in the new year, because when everybody comes back from holiday, because at the end of the day, we do need to remember that President Trump has obviously pushed this through, but now it's down to them getting, you know, actually appointed into these positions. And there's trillions of dollars on the table of lobbying corruption that needs to be removed and taken out. You know, you're talking about trillions on the table. And so now the American people, all of us are really going to see, is it the power of the people or is it the power of the lobbies? And if we can, I truly believe, Dylan, if we can dismantle this now, we are, as Americans, going to set ourselves free going forward, because we will tell these lobbies that you do not have power over us any longer. And we are going to be a party of the people and a nation for the people that are going to make free choices. And we will vote for people who will do right by us. And if you don't do right by us, you get removed from office and you don't get a round two.
Right.
And this doesn't just pertain to our health. This pertains to wars. This pertains to everything, because the American people thought they had a voice, but they have been silenced for so damn long that now they're finally waking up.
And I think, too, we don't know actually like what was being done without social media and the ability to voice and what we were being lied to or not. We don't know. People will say, oh, it's gotten so worse. It's gotten so worse. But how do we know that? How do we know the media wasn't controlled before? I don't know that. I have no way to prove that. So I don't know what we've been brainwashed with or what we haven't. But what I do know is this, is that there's far more people like you and I that are done, that have a platform, that aren't scared to use it any longer. And we're not going to hold back. It's not a right and a left thing. It's really a common sense thing. And it's a moral thing. That's all it is. And they do this where, oh, like, for instance, and this is another thing about people like you and I, as opposed to people that have their other sort of values. They think that if you're just this X group, that you're associated with this. Just like you said, you're Muslim, I'm Catholic, we're sitting here talking like it doesn't, I mean, what does that even matter? I don't even think, that doesn't even, it doesn't even make sense. Who cares? What does it matter?
You know, and this is where like this whole thing about diversity, this and the other. No, guys, it's not about like, and I'm a brown Muslim woman. I don't go around life being like, well, I'm a brown Muslim woman.
Exactly.
You should hire me because I get hired for jobs because, and I do the work they do, and clients pick me at the agency and they come work with us because I have merit.
Yeah.
I'm good at what I do. I'm not opening doors for my diversity card. I'm not walking in and being like, this is what, no, I don't run with that. I run with the fact that I am the best person for you to hire to build your business because I'm qualified in these areas and my team is qualified.
Exactly.
The whole thing about like running on diversity, there should be diversity because diversity of opinion. There should be diversity because we all bring different things to the table in terms of intellect or experience. But diversity of skin color? What are we doing here? And then this whole thing about like, when I came out and said, hey, I'm like, you know, I'm supporting Trump. I'm supporting Bobby Kennedy. I'm supporting people like Tulsi. And they were like, well, Trump is a bigot and a misogynist. I'm like, well, if you go on that route, he's brought in more women to, you know, positions of power. I may not agree with every single person he's appointed, but I'm going to talk about that. He's also like trying to, they just came out that Kash Patil, head of the FBI, I'm in Pakistani, he's Indian. So I'm like, on what cards are you guys like doing all of this on, you know? So it's too much of this like race first when it should be American first. Like you get qualified and hired, Christian, Jewish, atheist, whatever you are, it does not matter. You should get hired to a position because you have the merit to do it.
Exactly. I'm not saying it doesn't exist because there's always going to be people that don't like you for a certain reason. It's not necessarily just skin color. It's just whatever the reason. But fuck's sake, like I guess for most of us, that stuff, you don't even think about it. All I care about is the quality of the person I'm talking to and their morals. I really don't care about much else. How do we relate? How do we talk? And if I'm hiring you, which I've hired so many different people, all I care about is that you're honest, you communicate, and you're good at your shit.
Good person, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't go around, at least not the way I work, it's like, oh, you're so-and-so, I want to bring you in. I bring you in because you have merit and you're good at what yes. you're doing. It doesn't matter to me what race, religion, whatever you are. And then people come at me, they're like, you're privileged. I was like, how the hell am I privileged? I came to this country 10 years ago. I knew two people in America at the time, like or three people maybe spread out. But in Miami, I knew like practically nobody. I had like two friends down here. My entire career is self-made. It's self-built. Obviously, I don't say self because obviously people have helped me along the way with friends and people right. like colleagues. But I'm self-made to some extent, right? Like to pretty much all extent. My career was not handed to me. And I never had a problem, you know, being a minority, a Muslim, a woman. That was just never an issue on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of think people are their own worst enemies and people get into their own heads. And, you know, kind of create this self-vilifying like narrative about like we're the victim versus being like I'm incredible, I have a great opportunity here because I am different, right? I bring a different perspective to the table, and that's actually going to be my superpower.
Yes.
And some people are like, oh, because you're privileged. I'm like, how the hell am I privileged? Everything I have, I worked for it.
Here's what I feel, and I wonder how you feel about this, is like I feel that there's these built-in excuses for inadequacy. So like for when Hillary Clinton lost, well, it was because she was a woman or whatever. That is just bullshit. Like that is just an excuse to cover up the fact that you were inadequate, or when you just try to base it on skin color or whatever. I don't even want to get into that, but whatever it is, you know, it's a built-in excuse.
If you tell me somebody like Tulsi Gabbard was running, hands down, most people would vote for her.
Why wouldn't a second?
100%. She's incredible. She's a colonel at the army. Like, you would vote for Tulsi hands down. Why? Not because she's a woman, but she's fit to rule, like, run the country and actually position of, like, running the country in a way that we'd all be proud of, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think Kamala lost because, oh, she's a woman. She lost because she's inadequate to do the job.
Yeah. Well, she can't even fiddle out a complete sentence about anything that makes any sense. So, yeah, she's going to lose.
No, and but also, it was like, what did she do as vice president for 4 years?
Nothing.
Nothing. So then why do we think she's qualified to run a country?
I'm so lost you can really tell when a person, when you get put on the spot, it's not scripted, it's off the cuff, you got no kind of training on it whatsoever, it's just answer this question. And when you can't go straight into a question and answer it, and you got to dance and do these just nonsensical communication, it's just like, dude, how are you going to go talk to a world leader? You're not. We're screwed. And you have to ask yourself this. with everything that Trump has gone through. Now, I understand there's things about him people don't like. That's fine. I think it's funny, but some people don't. Okay, I get it. I do. But let me ask you this. For somebody that's gone through what he's gone through, like the just the nonstop onslaught, and it's never ended since he started this, what motive, what do you think the motive is for him to really want to do this, aside from a love for the country, for to go through all of this? He doesn't have to. He's got so much money and it doesn't need to. So what is the motive?
I personally think that America needs strong leadership right now.
Yes.
Another world war, like a World War III. And it's a disaster. We need somebody to come in and be like, I'm going to hunker down. I'm not under any delusion that he's going to be perfect, but I definitely think he was a better candidate. And I do think the people that he, not everybody that he's bringing in, but a lot of the people that came in with him with this, like this cabinet that are coming through, whether people like Elon, Vivek, I think they have a better sense of what to do. And I think their hearts are more in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
Elon's the wealthiest man in the world. He's already famous. He's already like wealthy beyond what he needs to be. Like, what is he in this for? He's in here to make change. And I think that is the kind of people a lot of us elected, right? People like Bobby Kennedy, who didn't need to be doing this, but here he is, who really want to do this to make change and leave this country a better place than they found it. And as somebody who's living here, I want that. I live here. I pay taxes here. I'm born in America. So if I'm here, I want to see this place a better place than I walked into. And for my future children, I want to leave a country that I'm proud of being part of what we're building. And I think personally, America's been in a very dark place a lot longer than we've realized. I think it goes back decades. It's not just, we didn't just get here today. It's not a Republican-Democrat issue. There have been some pretty shitty Republican. George Bush was a disaster. He was a complete neocon. I can't stand either one of them. So we've been here for a long, long time. But I think it's somebody finally who's going to raise up, you know, and say what's really been cooking under this mess.
I didn't know anything about politics back then, but I always thought he was the worst because everything like the gas prices, the war on drugs, all of this shit, you know, and granted, I was doing a lot of these things, but I was just like this guy. So I get it. I'm with you 100%. I just feel that the motive now is a lot different than it has been. And I think it's really scaring a lot of people in power with money. And I think that they're really freaking out right now. Yeah.
They've practically tried to run this country to the ground. The fact that we have the highest number of like chronic disease, yet we pay the most per capita than any other country in the world on healthcare, should tell you the state that we're in. And if people are not sounding the alarm and that is not concerning to you, then I don't know what rock you're living under.
I agree. You know, I did this and I want to start getting into the food dyes and the different like the glyphosates and the different things here with you. So I did this little trick here with my wife. I said, let's do a test. I said, I want to go through the cupboard and take out my pre-workout powders, my BCAA powders, just certain things. And I said, I want to go run these down and see how many of these have natural flavors, blue, yellow, you know, less than 2% sucralose or whatever. But if you start adding it up and it's like, holy shit, like boom, boom, boom. But I'm doing this daily, maybe multiple times daily. That's a lot when you add it up. And they trick you with their verbiage and everything like that. So what do you, because I think that the biggest thing that we can do when we have a platform is educate, teach people what to look for. What are some things to look for? Some tricky things that people need to avoid when they're buying things, you know, on food labels or verbiage that are marketing that they need to just, if they see it, go, uh-oh, you know, red flag.
Natural flavors.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing natural about natural flavors.
What is natural flavors? Tell everybody.
So basically, okay, so you see it at the back of like food labels and stuff like that, right? Natural flavors are derived from chemicals to put flavoring in your food.
Mm-hmm.
That is to make it more appealing and essentially more addictive. But a lot of it's like a hodgepodge of different chemicals. So natural flavors are actually toxins going to your body that can also cause cancer, right? So natural flavors are like a nope. Then you have things like added sugar. Sugar is probably, I would say, if I had to list everything down, sugar is probably at the top of the list, probably one of the most dangerous. And we take it in a little bit of dessert, and we take in a little bit of that. It is probably what's linked to the highest rate of like cancer, essentially, than anything else, even more than glyphosate, right? Glyphosate is coming up the block, but sugar is really what's decaying us and causing us a lot of inflammation. So I would say like it's like things like sugar, then you have your glyphosate, then you have your seed oils that is inflaming your body and your cells. And so it's a trifecta, right? Of all of these things kind of combusting at the same time. And our bodies, as it be, I'll back up a second. The reason these things are a problem is that our biology is still the same, but the environment we live in has evolved, but our biology, our cells have not evolved. So being around, you know, EMFs and being around like these 5G towers and being around like all of this like white light and eating all this toxic processed, highly processed foods, our bodies don't know what to do with it. On cellular levels, our cells have not evolved, but the environment around us has evolved so much that we're living in contrast to how we should truly be living inside. And in America, especially, we're eating such ultra processed foods, like you can't escape it. Like it's almost rare to be able to find something grass fed, you know, pasture raised, farm to table restaurants. It's easier to get fast food, right? And so you're living in this toxic soup, and then we are not detoxing properly. Uh-huh. We're not removing the toxins from our bodies. And so what is causing? It's causing more disease. So whether it's, you know, natural flavors for sure, it's like one thing to avoid at all costs. Anything that has added sugar in it, you need to be avoiding at all costs. Glyphosate, it is a weed killer. Can you imagine putting that in your body?
No. So how do we look for... And talk about the dangers of glyphosate. How do we look for something that has glyphosate and avoid it? Is it like non-GMO? Is it organic? How do we avoid getting that in our foods?
So I think it has to be both non-GMO and organic, because just because it says organic does not mean it does not have glyphosate on it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things which is hard to do is like sourcing food, like products from Europe, like if you can afford it, that's a lot of people are doing, right? But then it's the other tricky part that comes in. Some products that are made especially to travel to the US are treated differently than products you actually buy in Europe, right? So there's that piece of it. I think removing grains from your diet and eating what is an ancestral diet, which is like pretty much grain-free, is a thing that we need to do as Americans, because the grains are also making us super inflamed. And glyphosate, unfortunately, isn't so many different things now. And then they're trying to pass this law to say that you can't, I mean, synthetic wheat is going to come in. So imagine having synthetic wheat in, and then you can't even sue somebody if you get sick from all this glyphosate overload in your body.
Wow.
It's what Big Pharma basically did with the vaccine, saying you cannot sue pharma companies for being vaccine injured, right? That law was passed.
Right.
And they do. And so what it gave is it gave the Big Pharma carte blanche authority to run rampant. And so like I'm born in 1983, right? When I was born between 1983 to 1986, the vaccine schedule, I think, was 20, 25 vaccines all over. Now the vaccine schedule is like close to 107 vaccines. And the crazy thing about this is Big Pharma does not have to do studies combining all the different vaccines. So there's not one study, unless I messed something completely, there's not a single study on the market that looks at all the different vaccines children are getting and the accumulated effect of those vaccines, all the heavy metals, all the things going in, and what is going in over that time. So by the time, like, let's say a 1-month-year-old has, up to 90 days of birth, the child is getting anywhere from like almost 20 vaccines or something like that. That was probably the accumulation of every single vaccine we got when I was born in 1983 to 1986 that we got fully. I have a stat somewhere. I'm actually going to pull this up while we're speaking because I want to give you this. It was crazy to me. It blew my mind. And this is the other thing. Pharma companies are allowed to continue doing this without providing new research. There's not even up-to-date research in the last 20 years. So we've added more vaccines to the schedule, but yet we have not added in new research to show what it's doing to your body accumulated altogether. And then the rates of autism and ADHD go up and they're like, well, you know, this is not really, it's not correlated. Yes, it is. 100% it's correlated. So this is it. In 1986, right, we had vaccines given to us at 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months, right? So we had about six vaccines. Over here, this is a study. CDC just published its 2025 vaccine schedule. We have gone from 7 routine vaccines injections, so it was even less than I thought, in 1986, to over 200 routine vaccine injections in 2025.
Wow.
So I was wrong with my numbers. 7, I thought it was like 20, 7 to 200. In 1986, before vaccine makers had broad immunity to liabilities for injuries, the CDC's schedule had 7 routine vaccines that we know. Now for 2025 has 5 routine injections during pregnancy, over 17 routine childhood injections, births to age 18 and over 113 routine adult injections up to age 79. Can you imagine? And so we have a broken down biology already, right? Because our cells are functioning in a way that we're not meant for this like fast-paced environment and metropolitan life and all that stuff. Then you're poisoning us through our food. You're adding shit to our water. You cannot deny that they put shit in the sky because people have seen literal chemtrails and stuff.
Seen it, yeah.
Our bodies are loaded with toxins, and then you're injected. You're injecting us on top of that. So what is going to happen? Obviously, there's going to be a rise of chronic disease, cancers, diagnosis in children like ADHD. There's going to be fatty liver disease, an adult disease that was only in adults is now being diagnosed in children. Why? Because of the fructose mm-hmm. that they're taking in. Mm-hmm. So how can you not see the writing on the wall with all that we're seeing? You have to be blind if you don't want to pay attention to this, with the rise in chronic diseases that were reserved for adults showing up in children. And what is going on with the environment around us?
I mean, I even saw something like, it was a breakdown of the amount of ingredients in French fries and McDonald's in England as opposed to here. And it was like 4 over there and like 20 some here. I mean, it's just incredible. I do have a question that you brought up. Well, I have several from that because there were so many good ones. But when you said going with grain-free diet would be the best. So what are some examples of grains you would avoid? Because I know a lot, like even myself, I eat oatmeal, for example, but it's non-GMO. It's glyphosate-free. But do you think like things like that, or what other grains on top of that?
So if you really think about it, oatmeal is not, there's no nutritional qualities in oatmeal, right? But mm-hmm. it actually spikes your insulin,
mm-hmm.
right? So the other problem with us is, and why I said the whole grain-free thing, that doesn't mean, like, anybody listening to me, that doesn't mean I'm fully grain-free. I love my pizza. Like, I indulge, right? Like,
right.
But this is a problem. Most Americans are metabolically broken. We're not metabolically flexible anymore, right? So you can be as petite and skinny as me as I am, but I had metabolic issues. And it's why? Because of this toxin overload and all the shit in our food. So it is causing us to be metabolically unhealthy.
Right.
So then we have insulin resistance issues, right? Which is also leading to things like infertility and all that stuff, which is why they tell you when you're trying for fertility, you need to stabilize your insulin levels.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you eat something like oatmeal, right, all it does is spiking your insulin, right? And so it's easier, because we're so broken as it is, to remove this stuff and go back to what is like an ancestral diet, I would say, right? Eat like our ancestors, whole foods, unprocessed. You eat your fruits, you eat your vegetables, you eat meat, taking enough protein so you're actually like full enough. All of this stuff about being fat-free was completely wrong for us. Our bodies need healthy fats to operate. This was a fad. Like, this was one of the worst things that we did to ourselves, especially as women. Fat-free. Why the hell are you going? What are your cells made up of? Your cells are made up of lipids. They're fats. If you're not giving your body enough healthy fats, how are you going to function? You're going to have freaking brain fog. So all of this stuff is now getting kind of debunked. So personally, for me, it's like, if you can, try to be as grain-free, but of course, you're human, indulge. But like, and maybe people say like, hey, the 80-20 rule doesn't apply. Yes, but sometimes people are just so tired, and always try to choose the best options on the menu. Or if you're eating out, and if you're home, definitely. For us at home, we take no, like, we cook with healthy fats, healthy oils. We cook, you know, kind of gluten-free at home completely. We take a lot of like grass-fed, grass-finished protein. We have like, you know, kind of, you know, wild caught fish. So we're really careful with that stuff. But for a race of people that are metabolically broken, I don't think adding grains or sugars or any of that stuff is going to help us, because what it does is spikes our insulin.
Yep. 100%.
And spiking our insulin, this yo-yo that we do all day. So if you put on like a thing like a levels, like glucose monitor, most people are going like this all day. And that is what's breaking us down even further.
Mm-hmm. So I have been a nutritionist for 13 years and studying nutrition since I was 11. And I teach people everything you're saying, but myself, I have been in a black hole for 15 years eating low fat and thinking that was it. And literally, it's been about a month and a half. And I went from eating, and mind you, I'm working out like as 3.5 hours a day. So I went from like 15 grams of fat a day to 85. I've increased my calories 800 a day, and I have gotten more cut and more lean and perform at such a high, better level than I have in like 20 years. I'm eating ground beef, ground bison, fish every single day, and like cut out all of the other nonsense. I was snacking on vegetables and peanut butter all day, like literally all day long. And it has been like the most eye-opening. And but that was a mental block with the low-fat thing, you know?
Brainwashed. This is what they do. They put out these ads. You know, media publications come up with this shit. They brainwash people.
Yes. And that's coming from somebody that teaches the polar opposite. So I'm glad you brought that up. And there's so many good healthy fats that we could even get into. But that is spot on. And I couldn't agree with you more. I want to touch on the Kellogg's things that you and I have talked about. So let's kind of get into that a little bit. Tell me a little bit of information that you put out on Kellogg's in general, because I find it very fascinating.
Well, Kellogg's, I wrote this down because I was going to talk to you about this. Kellogg's saves 500,000% per pound by using artificial colors instead of real fruits and vegetables. So in America, we are served a very different version of Kellogg's. Not that I'm saying Kellogg's per se is healthy at all, but we're served a very different version of Kellogg's than other countries allow it, because we allow in, because the FDA approves it, allows in more food dyes and preservatives to retain shelf life and keep fresh. So you've basically given this company carte blanche authority to churn out shitty products that can stay on the shelves longer, so they don't have to actually invest that much. And what it's causing is it's a huge issue. 15 million kids, when it comes to public schools, are fed this stuff, this crap in the school. And why is that? Because companies like Big Food, Big Agriculture, Big Pharma, especially Big Food and Big Ag, are part of the lobbies and kind of like write what is allowed into the school meal systems, right? They like, hey, this is what's going to be allowed and this is what should be on the schedule and stuff. So they find all these like different loopholes. So you're telling me, even if you and I don't feed ourselves that or our kids that, there are 15 million kids who go to public school every day and that is on their lunch menu and that should be allowed? And it's full of red 40, yellow 5, all linked to behavioral issues, chronic disease, and things like cancer. And then you sit and cry about the fact that you're like, well, autism and ADHD rates are going up. Yes, they are going up because of what you're feeding these children. And all it is doing is giving them a sugar high. There's no nutritional value in something like Kellogg's. Why are we even feeding Kellogg's to children in schools? Developing minds, developing bodies. Why are they even given this junk? It is equivalent to junk food.
I just don't understand. And then they wonder why issue A, B, C, and we're on ADHD meds or antidepressant meds, and we're doing this and we're doing that. And it's just a jumbled mess from the start. And that's how we're training our kids. I just don't get it.
This is a whole thing. Like, you also see things that you just upon, you know, people, depression is going up, all of that. But all of these diseases are born in the gut. We all, you know, by now, anybody listening in your audience would know about the gut-brain connection, right? A lot of this, the serotonin and dopamine is actually produced in your gut. So if you're not feeding yourselves correctly and you have gut dysregulation, right, and you have things like SIBO, candida, all of this stuff that's coming out because of the shit food that you're putting in your body, all the processed crap that's going in, of course you're going to be more depressed because you can't regulate your serotonin and dopamine production correctly. And therefore, if you're not giving yourself on top of that good nutrition, then you're just going to be in a funky mood.
Right. And one of the things that I see constantly over the past, I would say, 5 to 10 years, is this acceptance of like normal testosterone levels just drop. And it's like the percentage of what normal testosterone was like 30, 40, even 50 years ago to what it is now. And then I see, and I battle this because I do hormone optimization, right? So I'm battling this with Quest. Like, they'll put out this new tier of where it's acceptable, and it's like so far from acceptable. And I think the diet plays a huge role in the crashing testosterone levels, amongst other things. But how do you feel about that?
I mean, diet and the plastics. We are taking in a week a credit card worth of plastic. This is the actual statistic. This is actually an article that was published. That's how much plastic. Think about that. We're taking in a week a credit card worth of plastic. And I think it was something else that I read, and you can look this up. It was like, over time, because of our over plastic exposure that we're having, I think like it's like 8% of our brain is developing into plastic. So you have a foreign entity, like a foreign thing in your body that's not meant to be there, that cannot be broken down. It cannot be digested. It cannot be secreted out of your body, right?
Uh-huh.
It's in there. It's getting in your organs. It's causing toxicity. So your body doesn't know what to do with it. So it stores it in there. So there's also this crazy research about like men's testicles, the amount of microplastics they have in them. And it's in our clothing, because the stuff is made like, let's say in China, it's full of like hot plastic, synthetic, all of this stuff. It's everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So of course, the environmental toxins that we're putting into our body, right, paired with the crap that we're eating, of course, it's going to be decline in testosterone levels. And then on top of that, men are just not as healthy as they used to be, right? They spend all their time on screens. And so another thing is blue light. We're not supposed to have blue light exposure to this extent because it plays with our circadian rhythm. If your circadian rhythm is affected, it breaks down your hormone production. So everything is linked. And then on top of that, if you look at the fact that, you know, kind of corporate farming, you know, industrial farming has demineralized a lot of the soil. So it's not like all we're eating organic. There's a bigger problem here. When your soil doesn't have the right minerals in it and you are mineral deficient, your body cannot produce hormones. Minerals lead to hormone production, right? Potassium, selenium, magnesium. You need these crucial minerals that used to back in the day come from our food, come from our soil. When you are deplete of actual minerals, your body cannot actually produce hormones because your hormones are produced from also getting these right minerals in. So all in all, also commercial farming has played a big role in this. So yes, most of us are eating organic, but we're not getting the right amount of minerals from our food. So we're having to supplement with all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Which is not ideal. It's much better to get it all from your food. The supplement is the key word there, supplement, meaning you supplement it in. And I think people get very dependent on protein powder supplements and try to compensate. I told my wife, I said, you know what? I think I'm taking too much magnesium in right now because of my diet change and I'm getting so much from food and I was taking so much to compensate, you know, for my lack. And so you have to be aware of that too. And I think that's important to be in tune with your body. Now, let me ask you this. Well, first, you brought up grass-fed. So just for people watching that don't understand, like they take that term and they don't really grasp what that means. What is the difference between grass-fed and regular, like beef or whatever?
It's what the animal's actually being fed, you know?
Right.
Is it processed? Is it greens? Or is it actually being able to roam in a pasture and actually eat grass and consume it? And it's not just grass-fed. This is another greenwashing term. I mean, greenwashing basically, for anybody listening, means way that these big food companies play around with words to be more appealing, but they get away with it under the radar. So there's grass-fed, but there's grass-finished. Is the animal just given the grass for a short portion of its life, or is it given that till the end and that is all that they're given, which means grass finished? So a few years ago, we all started learning about, well, most of us who are kind of a little bit newer to this might have started learning about, hey, grass fed. Other people might have known about it for longer, but now it's this whole like thing about grass finished, which goes a step further. It's like, that's why it's important to know where you're buying your produce from, what is your farmer feeding it, and it goes down to eating like the way Americans used to in the 60s and in the 70s, is small produce, knowing where your food is coming from, learning about how these farmers are treating their animals, knowing how, even raw milk. Raw milk is actually where all the goodness is, right? That's where the healthy fats are. That's where the amino acids are. The pasteurization is causing the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And so we've like demonized these things, like going back to the grass-fed, grass-finished, that's a really big thing to look for. But also raw milk has been demonized for so long. The problem is not with dairy. The problem is with the pasteurization, the process of removing, you know, the good stuff from the dairy is causing the health issues. And that's where you can't physically digest it and people are breaking out and they feel uncomfortable and stuff. It is the processing. And why have they processed this stuff? To give it more shelf life.
So talk about raw milk, because that's very controversial. So I'm curious your opinion on it. Why is there so much controversy behind raw milk?
I mean, listen, I personally love raw milk and it sits really well with me and I don't have these breakouts and stuff, but I can tell you if I had regular dairy, I completely break out with it.
Really?
Raw milk itself, and anybody listening can look it up, has so many great like health benefits for your gut. Mm-hmm. It just has so many great benefits to it. And I think this is another thing that it's having this wild control and narrative about how all the things that are good for us, bad for us. The same thing with meat. People advocate so aggressively against meat and they're like, oh my God, it'll raise your cholesterol levels and you will have blocked arteries and all that stuff. Max Ligavere just posted a study, I think it was yesterday or day before, showing that they cannot directly correlate with taking a good quality protein, like high quality meat, with like in blocking your arteries, right? So there's not enough data there to suggest that. And I think for me, it's like going a step further. It's about controlling the things that are actually good for us and kind of demonizing all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so raw milk, yes, the whole thing about it is that we have to pasteurize it to remove any sort of disease or viruses from it, so it needs to be heated to a certain point. But that's when you're damaging the actual milk, and then you're kind of saying, hey, well, dairy's the actual problem and it causes inflammation, when dairy actually in its original form, untampered with, has so many great benefits.
Right, 100%. Okay. Yeah, because I see so many people going back and forth on that, and I'm just like, okay. So thanks for clearing that up too. So in your view, because I'm curious too, because I do a lot of stuff on diets, and I do a lot of this battling with keto type diets, low carb diets, you know, high fat diets. How do you feel about the keto diet in general? Are you a low carb, moderate carb? I'm just very curious as to your stance on it, because you have so much good insight on diet. Where do you fall personally?
Listen, keto can be amazing. I think you need to cycle it in and out. I can't be that extreme. I love to travel. I love to try different types of food. I'm a citizen of the world. I enjoy my life. So I'm not so stringent. I think it is important that when you are eating the carbs, like I said, it's good quality, glyphosate-free product actually you're eating, which is why people gain all this weight in America. And in Europe, they go eat the same way. They don't feel the same. You know, they don't gain the weight and feel like shit. So keto is amazing. I know it's helped a lot of people with severe chronic disease. It can have amazing health benefits. Personally, I think you'd like need to cycle it in and out. I do not believe in being extreme with anything that I do. I, you know, tend to keep like, you know, on days that I weight train a lot, for example. So days that I'm kind of weight training and trying to gain more muscle, I will keep, actually personally, I will keep my carb intake a little bit lower. And I try to really focus having more protein, especially most women, most of us don't get enough protein in to begin with, right? So I have a balanced diet. I try to eat organic, real whole foods. So kind of like an ancestral diet, right? I eat organs, I eat poultry, I eat fish, I kind of eat fruits and vegetables. I don't demonize food. I really think that's a bad, bad, bad thing to do. This is good and this is bad. The only thing that's bad for you is processed and things that have been tampered with. Everything else kind of goes. I eat in moderation and I try to start my day with a lot of protein. So I start my day with like 20 to 30 grams of protein. And then kind of take it from there. And that actually keeps me satiated for longer as well. So I don't fall into any of these like, well, I eat like this and I eat like that and just how I identify with and whatever. I do personally have more of a palate. I mean, I love meat. I'm very prone to that. And I really enjoy it. My husband, you know, likes fish a little bit more. And I think that comes down to like my genetics, my genes. I'm Pakistani and I'm from the north of Pakistan where we tend to consume a lot of meat. We like, we come from a big barbecue culture. It is something not foreign to us. It's part of our staple food. So we would eat it every single day. So I crave that. And I feel like if I don't get enough meat, I crave it. It's like one of the things I want with every meal.
I went like 15 years with like not having hamburger or meat or anything. And I have it every, like I kind of start doing bison now instead of ground beef. Oh, it's, I mean, that's a different story altogether. It's so good. And like it's just satiating to the highest level. I like how you said you started your day off with protein early. I think that's important in the morning, especially is that protein intake with a little bit of fats. I try to do a little bit of carb post workout, but I'm kind of like 40-40-20, like 40 fats, 40 protein, 20 carbs. I'm just kind of working through it right now, but I think there it to me. Keto is very hard to sustain long term. I don't think you should cut carbs out too long term. I don't.
It doesn't know what to do with them when you introduce them back in, and then you're spiking your insulin levels, and you're like, your body's like, what are you doing?
Exactly. I feel the same way. I think it's good to have it in there. I don't like too high. Some people do, and it's trial and error, really, on your body. So I think people fall into this. Oh, it's got to be this or this or this, and they don't even try. You know, and I was guilty of that, and I just tried, and I'm like, holy shit. This is amazing. So, but then there's my next question. When we were talking about oils earlier and we didn't go to it. So I take SCT oil, not MCT. So I'm talking short chain triglyceride. That's what I put in my coffee. And I'm big on olive oil and things like that. What is your opinion on like what oils do we need to look out for and what oils do you recommend using?
So healthy fat oils. I love ghee personally. I love ghee. I love butter. You know, olive oil is amazing for its like polyphenol qualities, but anybody listening, please make sure that you're buying a high quality olive oil that is single source, meaning it comes from one origin point and is manufactured in one place. Because what they've also started doing is, and this is the other thing, is they water down olive oil. No. If it comes from multiple sources, then you're getting not good quality, right? And it's being tampered with and mixed with and kind of that. So when you're buying olive oil, you want single source, which maintains quality and integrity, and you want it to be manufactured in one place. ideally, some of the best olive oils obviously come from Europe. So that's the thing. Ghee is amazing. Butter is amazing. Avocado oil is amazing. And then you have the whole plethora of all like your essential like grapeseed oil and all the kind of like the seed oil categories, right? And there's a whole list of them. And I think that's another big thing is we can't avoid them because they're here and there's, you know, they're around. But I think there's ways, like when eating at home, especially, you really need to mitigate things. Or you can use an app called like Seed Oil Scout, which like looks at local restaurants in your area and kind of will tell you, hey, these are the seed oil. These restaurants are all seed oil free. This is the ones to shop from. And it's amazing. So it's literally called Seed Oil Scout.
Taking notes.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so I'm also going to put up the whole, Seed Oil Scout. And I'm going to pull up the whole list of seed oils so you guys see how big it is. It's wild. And you tell me how many restaurants. It's really hard to avoid all of this stuff. So
literally,
canola oil is probably the worst one. Like canola is like, you don't want to touch that if your life depends on it. But a lot of restaurants use it. So canola oil is the one that's used by most restaurants. Unfortunately, that's actually one of the worst ones.
Seed Oil Scout.
Yeah, easy with that. So then you have soybean oil, you have sunflower oil, you have safflower oil, you know, all of these different things, and they like label them with different names. And I think Dave Asprey posted this the other day, how the names change, but you still need to watch out for it. So any of these oils are inflammatory oils. They're low quality oils. They're inflammatory. And what they do is, and this is the other thing I want to explain. When you talk about your health, you need to talk about the health of your cells. Because if you do not have healthy cells, nothing you put in your body, you can put in the best supplements, you can take in the best food, it is not going to work. Because if your cell wall, the actual membrane of your cell is compromised and the membrane is made up of lipids, then all the shit will get in and all the good can't stay in because your cell is like this like spongy little body, right? That has this like layer around it.
Yeah.
And so what's happening with environmental toxins and the processed food that we're eating in these oils, it is breaking down that lipid barrier and it's attacking it. And therefore, your overall health is extremely, extremely compromised. So if you're working, whether you're working on a chronic disease, whether you're working on just improving your immunity, whether you're working on just like better gut health, you need to fortify your cells and keep your cells like, you know, kind of like build on that health. And one of the products that I love and I swear by this brand, it's phosphatidylcholine.
Okay.
Phosphatidylcholine, basically what it does is if you take it for long enough, you can take a liquid form, you can do it in an IV form. There's a brand that I love. It's called Body Bio. It's tested. They've been around for 40 years. This is not a new company that just started. They have shown studies that if you take it every single day in the right amount of dose, you can remove heavy traces of heavy metals, glyphosate, you know, personal care products that have a lot of shit in them as well, all out of your body by taking it because it essentially acts like a chelator and it kind of like detoxifies things out of your cells. Mm-hmm. But also what it does, it fortifies your cell wall, the membrane around it.
Okay.
So what the thing is, listen, you have to live in society. You can't not go out and eat. And although like we do try to limit that in my house as much as possible, but you're out. So I'm just, I work in marketing. I'm out and about. I have events. I have people to see. So what I do is I make sure that there's certain core things that I'm taking that are making sure that I'm healthy. And everything for me, now that I've really gone to the science of things, starts with the health of your cells.
So
that's really where it goes down to.
Then that's where I was going to ask you. So this supplement, you said it's called Body Bio. That helps to build
brand. Yeah, but the supplement itself is called PC.
Okay.
So that's choline.
That's going to help build cellular health then, yes. Correct?
100%.
Okay. So that's one of the things that I'm kind of getting into right now is mitochondrial and cellular health. What can you just state the importance of that for people and give them an understanding of just how important that truly is?
Every single organ in your body has mitochondria in it.
Right.
Everything in your body operates from your mitochondria, right? So if your mitochondria is compromised because it's like swimming in a toxin cesspool and it cannot really function because it cannot even produce ATP. And if you don't have ATP in your body, guys, you die basically because your cells can't function without it. So if you're not feeding your cells in a way, and it's not like, hey, I'll just go get NAD IVs. Listen, if your cells are toxic, you put the NAD in, where is it going to go? Right out the door, right?
Right.
So it's about cleaning up your diet, cleaning up your environment, cleaning products, personal care products, what you're actually putting in, removing seed oils to whatever extent you can, and then fortifying your cell walls so that your body can produce that energy and actually use it. and then is adding in these longevity supplements like the NADs, NAD pluses or the NMNs and the NRs kind of into your body so that your body actually knows what to do with it. But if your cell is damaged, then your mitochondria cannot function.
Right. Okay. Well, I hope everybody's paying attention closely to that because that is like of the utmost importance. So I just want to make sure that that is stressed fully. So I have another question for you. When I was at the Eudaimonia convention, I was in a conference, and this was a question posed to Andrew Huberman, and they asked him what his top five like most essential supplements were that he felt were so important. Do you have any that you recommend people that are just so for me? Creatine is one of them. I believe glutamine is very important because of the ability to help with your gut repair, you know, basic everyday supplements that aren't going to be harmful that you really need on multiple levels. I've done a ton of study on creatine and the importance there. Are there any that you're looking at that you feel are very, very crucial to people that they should really consider taking, you know, daily?
Creatine for sure. I've increased creatine intake as a woman as well. Creatine is so important. If you're a woman past the age of 30, you need to be taking creatine. It has so many, it's not just about building muscle. It has so many other great health benefits. So creatine, like number one.
Thank you.
Vitamin D. Most of us are extremely vitamin D deficient.
Mm-hmm.
We are, and vitamin D deficiency can lead to a lot of other health issues. And we just don't get enough vitamin D. I have darker color skin and I live in Miami and I had vitamin D deficiency, right?
Wow.
So you'd be surprised by that. So vitamin D is another really crucial one. Magnesium as a whole, and I think one of the best magnesiums on the market is bio-optimizers because it uses seven different types of magnesiums, right? Magnesium is an essential mineral that you need in your body to do a lot of other functions. So magnesium is, and it helps improve the quality of your sleep, all of that stuff. So this, and for me, PC that I just spoke to you guys about is non-negotiable. And then instead of taking another supplement, take in a healthy fat. You want to take in, you know, olive oil through because of the polyphenols. You want to have some butter, ghee, whatever it is. A healthy fat. Keep it simple. But some of these are like non-negotiables for me.
Right. Okay.
Supplements. I was actually at the talk, but I had to leave at that time. What were his? I forgot. Creatine was one, obviously.
Oh, the omega-3 was his first, was his number one. And I'm trying to think of what the... I was so caught off guard by the creatine being number two at the time that I was just so fascinated.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what his other three were. I remember omega-3 being number one. I can't off the top of my head remember.
What was his reason for making omega-3 number one?
I don't. He said it was just the most vital and most important in his view. And I'm, I mean, everybody's got their own opinion, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's important for sure, but I don't know if necessarily I would have had that number one either. But to each their own, we're not all going to agree.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, okay. So let me ask you this. I don't know how into this you are or not, but I'm curious as to your thoughts on the GLP-1 agonist, because we just know how popular Ozempic and is and tirzepatide and everything. Do you have an opinion on those? Do you find a place for them? Do you think they're misused? Do you find merit in them? What is your thought?
I think that, again, this is a thing that we're not addressing the root cause issue. We're
right.
Just treat people with another drug. It's not going to fix your baseline problem, but
no.
here is the drug, you know? And so were you in any of the talks at Eudaimonia where it got really controversial?
I was sending videos home to my wife and my mom, like clips of the, and I was like, I thought I was going to just like an information conference. And I said, watch this shit. You know?
They went wild. So listen, it goes back to the fact that we are metabolically broken, right? And that's why we're GLP-1s to kind of regulate and kind of get us back into baseline. But why are we not trying to fix the root cause? And yes, some people are at the point that they're super obese and they just are so tired and they're exhausted and they have kids and they cannot do it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, think there is room in the conversation for certain people to be on it, but I feel that way too many people are on it that are just fucking lazy.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree.
Just get your shit together. And they're just on it because this is an easy solution. So again, we have turned to pharma for a solution on our health when it should actually be related to like fixing the root cause.
Yep.
Well, what are you actually putting in your body? What are you putting in your mouth, right? What are you opening your mouth and actually putting in? Is it clean? Is it organic? Is it non-processed food? Are you getting in enough movement? I just think that we're going towards pharmaceutical companies again for solutions on our health, which I think is giving up too much control. Is there a place for it? Absolutely. There's people that need it. Some people will have a different opinion to me, but some people are just to the point that they're so not even, they're so large, they're tired, they don't know what to do, and that sets them off on a good starting point. But I think it should be bigger than that. There should be a lifestyle, aggressive lifestyle modifications that need to be made at the same time. And I'll tell you guys, something fun. So when I was starting my fertility treatments, they said, hey, you need to balance out your insulin levels and all of that stuff. It needs to be moderated, you know, so you're not having insulin spikes. Eat, because I was not wearing a tracker. And there's natural versions of GLP-1. So the brand I spoke to you about called Body Bio, they make this thing called sodium butyrate. Butyrate is so well researched and studied at completely neutralizing insulin and putting good bacteria back into your stomach after each meal, right? That does not mean you should go eat a chocolate cake, but you can eat it and it'll neutralize that. Berberine, another really, really great thing. Uh-huh. Alpha-lipoic acid. These things come in combined things as well that you can get, and they're completely natural GLP-1s, and they regulate your blood sugar, which essentially what is a GLP-1 does? It kind of sends a signal to your body, to your brain. Hey, I'm full. I'm satiated. I do not need more food. Hence, cutting down how many calories you're actually intaking, right? And the second thing it does is keeps you fuller longer because it, again, sends that signal to your brain. I'm good. I've eaten. I'm fine, right? So why are we looking to do that more through lifestyle changes? And then why are we not doing it through these other healthy things? And it's really about retraining ourselves, right? I think a lot of people have started using like food as an emotional crutch or just to get through things. We're eating for the sake of eating versus eating with purpose.
Right. 100%. And you can't have a 10-cent diet and depend on all of this shit to make up for it. It's just not going to work. It will not work.
I was at a friend's house yesterday and they're like, literally like eating a tub of ice cream. They're just eating ice cream. They're like, we're on Manjaro. And I was like, sure, great. I'm just looking at them and I'm like, and they asked my husband, they're like, you're not taking it? I was like, no, he's not taking it. He's making lifestyle choices. Like, he's not taking this shit. You know what I mean? Like, he works out. He's going to do it the right way. Because and that doesn't mean like people I don't know have done it. It's fine. But what I'm saying is you're not fixing the problem. You need to get to the root cause and retrain your body versus just being dependent on one thing or the other.
Yes. And that's just it. It's the mindset and the motive. Okay. Just like you said, if you're going to take it, use it purposefully. Understand the means that you need to use it by. You need to still focus on taking in enough protein and accommodating your diet and not letting it take advantage of your life and then being dependent on it. Because once you stop, if you do what you just said that somebody's doing with the tub of ice cream, you're not just going to gain the weight back when you're done. You're going to gain more weight back and you're going to create bigger problems than you already had before you started.
I agree 100%. And listen, people, like somebody, a doctor told me yesterday, right? Because my hormones have been a little bit all over the place. And he's like, hey, your estrogen has been low for so long. You should take, he said, like, very, 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 very low dose semaglutide because of your bones. It helps with bone density because I'm worried about your bones and whatever. I was like, I just started hormone replacement therapy. So I said, no. I say, I've been lifting more. So I've taken my weight training from 1 day, 2 days a week to 4 or 5 days a week, right? I'm lifting a lot right now to compensate for that. And I'd rather boost my levels naturally. And obviously, I've added in bioidentical hormones, not synthetic. And so I'd rather do it that way than put myself on, you know, a GLP-1 in any capacity and just be dependent on something.
100%. I'm going to shift. I got one more peptide question for you, and then I want to shift focus. Are there any that you prefer that you've used, or have you kind of stayed away from them personally?
There's so many peptides. Into this whole space. So BPC 157.
It's sure. Everybody.
Hero product, GHKCU. Back in the day, you know, you had thymosin alpha and beta. They've kind of taken them off the schedule, but those were incredible peptides. Like, what could those guys not do? And they were incredible for healing and recovery and all that stuff. Semaglutide is another one that, you know, does really well, and it kind of builds your natural, like, you know, growth hormone in your body naturally. Is it tesamorelin, the one that you take at night that also builds your natural like growth hormone levels? So that's another thing. Do not inject. And I don't know what you think about this, but like, I do not believe in injecting growth hormone. You need to tell your body signals to produce natural growth hormone.
Mm-hmm. It's a slippery slope and people abuse it and they think they're going to get the world out of it. And I'm not a big fan either. I've always kind of been that way. I was going to ask you about tesamorelin because that one is one that has become quite a bit more popular and a lot more people are using, but BPC 157 is by far and away the most popular.
Yeah.
I use a cream of BPC 157 and TB 500 that is so effective that I love personally. But I was curious before I move on, what did you think of the GHKCU? Because I'm just getting ready to start that myself. And so I'm curious as to your experience. Yeah.
It's great. It's like, it's the collagen building blocks of your body. So when I take it versus I haven't taken it for like 4 or 5 months. I think I'm going to introduce it back in soon, but it really does make a difference. You have this nice glow to your face. And what is it? It's copper.
Right. Right.
100%. Another, you know, it's really great for like building that, you know, the collagen and elasticin, especially as you're aging, you need that to go with your body. So I think it's a great peptide for men and for women. It's a great, but everything, right? Do it in moderation. You need to split in and out. You cannot just be in it all day, every day. You cannot be dependent on anything. You should not be.
Yeah, your body is going to get used to it. You will desensitize to these things. Not to mention that you don't know exactly what the long-term ramifications are for abusing some of these things. There's just not enough to know. I have GHKCU capsules right now that I'm going to try. So I'll let you know how the efficacy is on those as opposed to an injection. So
methylene blue. We didn't talk about that, but there's benefits of methylene blue being researched with like preventing like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's research.
Yep.
Methylene blue is incredible for your mitochondria, guys. And if you stack these biohack stacks, sometimes they're really great, right? So if you take methylene blue and you stack it with red light therapy, near red and infrared light, it is incredible for your mitochondrial health.
I just did a podcast with Dr. Scott Schur, and he is a big methylene blue guy, and we got into that in detail. So, and I have a red light coming tomorrow, by the way, too. I can't
wait.
Yeah, I'm waiting
for
that.
Stack. That's an incredible stack. You can do it while meditating in the morning. You want to do a morning meditation, take like, I don't know, 10, 15 breaths and go in front of your red light in the morning, take methylene blue in an empty stomach and do that as a morning stack. And it's incredible for you.
I can't wait. I am really looking forward to it. It's the Mitolux one. So I'm really amped for it.
Yeah.
So I posted this on one of your posts that we were going to get into this and I want to get into it. It's not really my area, but it is yours. And I want to discuss this because I'm curious and I want to educate people. So it was something you had posted about the pill and the effects that it could have on possibly causing cancer and other things like that. So could we get into that? Because as soon as I heard that, I was like, okay, we got to talk about this.
So listen, we as women have been on synthetic birth control for way too long, and it's actually causing us more harm than good.
Right.
So you go to the doctor today and you're like, I had this, right? I had ovarian cysts. I like, take the pill. But why am I actually getting cysts? Like, well, let's talk about why I'm actually getting cysts. Hey, you have PCOS. Here, take the pill. PCOS is a metabolic disorder. You're not metabolically flexible, which is why you're getting things like essentially PCOS, but they're not screening for that. It's the same thing with childhood vaccines. It's like you go to the gynecologist and get paid to give everyone like a, you know, prescription to the pill. And so I recently, because I'm doing IVF, one of my doctors wanted to control my cycle a little bit, put me on the pill so they could regulate when they can do the retrieval and all that stuff. And I go and I pick up a pill that was just sent to the pharmacy, whatever, and I turn it around and it has like yellow 5 in it. And I go and I'm like, why the hell does my birth control have yellow 5 in it, right? I said, I've spent months cleaning up my body, getting all these toxins out of my body. What is actually going on over here? And I think I posted that on my Instagram.
Yeah.
Doctor literally writes back, and luckily my IVF doctors are super functional. They said, Iman, there are barely any pills without dyes in it. Red 40, yellow 5, all of that stuff. And I'm like, what do you guys mean? And they're like, it's going to be so hard. Go back to the pharmacy. And I stood at the pharmacy for 45 minutes and said, give me a pill that is not colored.
Right.
And I did a whole reel about this. So they put food dyes in the pills so that you can differentiate which one you're taking when you're taking. I'm like, you can just label the damn thing.
Exactly.
And also think about it this way. I'll step back further. So we know food dyes, okay, they're linked to hyperactivity, but they're also linked to chronic disease and they're linked to a rise in cancer rates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me as a woman, you're taking something synthetic every single day, right? Except for the 1 week that you have a cycle. Every single day you're putting it into your body. It is synthetic. It is shutting down your ovaries, right? Sending your signals to your ovaries to shut down. And you're not detoxifying properly. Most people aren't. And so you're slowly every single day adding a synthetic thing into your body that is toxic, that then has direct correlation to things like cancer. So what does that do for you? Think about all of this. And my doctors agreed with me. They were like, listen, like, They're not in. I think there was two brands of pill that were completely dye-free. I said, so you're taking a synthetic hormone with food dyes that are linked to cancer, and you're putting it in a woman's body, and you're telling, and her ovaries are shut down. Like, what?
What? Well, how many? And this is obviously you can't answer this in certainty, but just in your opinion, how many women do you think even know about this or would have any clue whatsoever?
So women's health overall is so understudied and under-researched. And until like a few years ago, like ovarian health is just being spoken about because back in the day, people used to be like, oh, well, women are like little men. No, we're not. You know, men have one 24-hour hormone cycle. Women have four hormone cycles, different hormone cycles a month. We're completely different. Our anatomy is completely different. We're built differently. We function differently. You know, we hit menopause. We have so many things that go on with us. So women's health is so understudied. And I think all of this research is now just kind of coming to the surface and women are becoming more educated and more aware of this stuff. And they're like, actually, because so for so long, we believed the doctors. Mm-hmm. We believed the guys in like white coats because there's we were meant to trust them, right? They're supposed to have integrity. They're meant to keep you safe. But now that all of this stuff, whether it's a Maha movement or before that, people are waking up and they're not trusting just their doctor and they're going to do their own research. And do you see the article? I don't know if it was in the New York Times or something like that about how, you know, it's made up in our heads if we're not feeling well. So women are also being gaslit in medical circles for so long when they showed signs of menopause, when they said they took a pill and it wasn't working for them, it's not making them feel good. Or it's just like, oh, you're just being fussy. The gaslighting has now also come to the surface. So
sure.
I don't have the exact data, but I would personally say like, I have a lot of young women who work for me. Probably 60-70% of them are just waking up to this stuff.
Unbelievable. Well, I mean, we have a job here to do, right? And let's just right. educate and work together. And that's why this is so important and why I am making it a point to do all of these podcasts and put out as much as I can with as many well-versed people as I can that know more than I do in these areas and just try to contribute to it.
No, thank you so much for bringing me on. And I hope everybody kind of like enjoys the conversation. And, you know, I'm always learning. I'm ever always evolving. You know, I always say I'm not an MD, but I'm really passionate about these conversations and helping people get like heal themselves and be connected to their spirituality again, their physical health, their emotional health, because you can't just out supplement trauma. You can't out supplement or out pray something that's chronically broken in your body. It all, we're a big ecosystem and everything has to work together. So your emotional, physical, and spiritual bodies all need to be in correlation with each other.
Well, and a lot of doctors, they're so busy in their practice or they're so kind of just getting to this routine or they learned their stuff in their books and that's it. They don't do these dives into everything daily. They just don't. They're general practitioners. And I'm not trying to throw shade because there's good doctors out there for sure, but there's a lot more bad ones than there are good ones. And the good ones, you'll find it like they've gone their own way. They've started their own clinics, their own alternative medicine clinics. And I've spoken to so many and they tell me the same thing. We left because we couldn't take the lies and the dishonesty and the pressure. Because, you know, the insurance companies, and I'll give you a little insight onto this, which I'm sure you're already well aware of, is the doctors will write prescriptions. But like for me, I got diagnosed with a high LP little A score and they just want to put you on a statin, this, statin, that. When I know in total reality that all that does is increase my LP little a. It does nothing to help it. It does nothing at all. And crushing my LDL is not the answer. And when I wanted PCSK9 inhibitors, they won't write me the scripts because they have pressure from insurance companies that if you write those and you don't write for statins, we'll drop you. Literally fucking drop you. So, I mean, not everybody has the connections I have to get to the right doctors to write me the scripts. So what do you do? Or the education to know. So they're just putting you on these things that are actually hurting you, that have nothing to do with your actual cause. And so I just think people need to understand and be aware that sometimes I don't want to say, because doctors have a very vital role in things they do, like especially surgeries or things like you and I couldn't do that stuff. But when it comes to this kind of depth, I take it everything a lot different than I may have 10 years ago from people like you and I. Like, I really listen and I really dig deep and learn from it. So I just want like that credibility. You have to look at who you're talking to and how passionate they are and where they're coming from, and then look into even what we're saying too, if you'd like, but, you know, compare and contrast at the least.
But there's so much also good research out there. If you want to dig and look in and ask questions, you will find alternative solutions. And the problem is these insurance companies have their claws so deeply around the medical system and just feeding the doctors one sort of an agenda. You walk in and let's say you have an appointment with a doctor, like, hey, I'm not feeling well, I'm having issues sleeping or whatever it is. They have 10, 15 minutes to see you. They're not asking how much screen time are you getting? How much light are you getting? What's your nutrition like? What are you eating? They don't have time for that. All they have time is to write your prescription and get you out there and wait for the next patient to come through.
Exactly.
And then what's happening is the healthcare that we're talking about, which is this alternative healthcare, functional, holistic, all that, that is so expensive because it's not covered by insurance. So a lot of people don't have access to it.
Right.
But it should actually be the other way around. This is how healthcare used to be. Mm. And the accessibility piece should be there for the average American, for the average consumer. So you're now the standard is if you have money, you can do all of this stuff. But if you don't have money, you don't have access to this stuff. And how is that fair?
It's not. It's
made
horrible.
It inaccessible for people that really probably truly even need it.
Yep. I don't have like the money per se. I just have the like know-how and persistency.
But
a lot of people just don't. They just don't.
They're tired. You have people, you have moms or dads working two jobs just to make ends meet. Inflation is through the roof. They're trying to just keep, you know, food on their table. That's why these are the people who go to 7-Eleven and will buy, unfortunately, crap because they're worn out, they're tired. And so what we're saying is if you don't have the education, then you should be fed shit food and it's okay if you get sick. Instead of being like, you deserve the education, plus you also deserved for everything to be cleaned out. And there have to be better things available on SNAP programs at your local grocery store, at your 7-Eleven, that is not processed shit. So you're not going home and feeding it to your family and to your kids.
100%. I couldn't agree more. Well, let me ask you about your podcast. Kind of tell everybody what your podcast is about, how long you've been doing it, you know, what kind of topics you discuss.
So I started Biohacking in January. So now it'll be in December, and I took like a 2-3 month break in the middle. It's called Biohack It. So meant help you optimize your health, your wellness, your spiritual health, your emotional health. A lot of the things that we've spoken about, right? The whole goal of Biohack It is to motivate people to make habits and change, to walk away a little bit more inspired with how we're doing life.
Right.
And so we talk to relationship experts. We talk to a lot of great, incredible medical doctors. We speak to personalities like yourself. I'm excited to get you onto my podcast. And it was really exciting because we're in the top 5 for alternative health in the U.S., which was really exciting because I just started it, you know, kind of in January. So that was a really great thing for like myself and my team that works on the podcast with me. And so it's all about education, really. We have like really deep dive conversations into sometimes even into politics and your health and your spirituality and ways to make you feel more inspired, but also walk away feeling like you have a community that's standing behind you and you're not an outlier for wanting to think like this or stand in this crowd.
Wow. I applaud you for the work that you're doing. It's very inspirational and it's helpful. And I just know it has to feel rewarding and beneficial. And I'm just glad that you're doing what you feel like you're called to do. I love that so much and I appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And you know, I just wanted to put something out there that was me, uncensored.
I love it.
For people to get to know me and really hear and, you know, get to, and I, honestly, Dylan, I would meet such incredible people because of work. And I said, you know, I'm not the expert, but I'm going to bring you the experts. I'm going to bring you people that I really believe in. Last week, I dropped this incredible cancer doctor who heals hundreds and thousands of people every year through alternative means away from radiation and chemo. And she talks about it. Again, board certified doctor, absolutely incredible. And so I just want to give knowledge back to the people.
Yeah.
And then what they do with it and how they walk away inspired to dig deeper or take an alternative route and deal with things like, you know, 1 in 3 people is touched with somebody with having cancer in their life. Mm-hmm. The statistics are getting crazy. And so what are we going to do? Our job here, yours, mine, other people like us, is to help people find their knowledge, and what they do with that is up to them.
100%. Well, tell everybody, I'll put all of this in the description as well, but how can people follow you and find you? What's the best way to kind of take on everything that you're providing?
So my Instagram handle is Iman, I-M-A-N underscore Hassan, H-A-S-A-N. So that's my Instagram. For my agency, if you want to find our websites, iacagency.com. and Biohack It is obviously biohack-it.com. That's us and all kind of all three things that I do. Myself, my agency, my podcast.
I love it. I love it. Well, once again, like I said, I really appreciate you taking an extended amount of time for me today. It's really appreciated. I know how busy you are. So thank you very much. I will make sure to link everything in the description, but it's been a blessing to talk to you and to put all of this out there today. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing me on and reaching out. I really appreciate all the work that you're doing as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. Well, that wraps up another one today. So stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Iman Hassan signing off.